We're going to shift gears now, and we're going to move over to Ireland. And I have a friend that I have met. I met him on Twitter, and we've become friends after that. He is a singer-songwriter. He's a school teacher, and he has some really great views on the perspective of life here in the United States. And his name is Andy McCarroll. And I'm going to let you listen to one of his songs called It's Not Easy, and I'm going to get Andy on the line, and we will be right back with Andy McCarroll.
I'm thinking of movies and the stories they tell. They move me so deeply, I feel I'm in there as well. Brushes and pens, come paint me a picture, fairy tale with a happy end. It's not easy, darling, I'm not sure how to give. It's not easy, baby, when you find it so hard to live. It's not easy, darling, I'm not sure how to give. It's not easy, baby, when you find it so hard to live.
Let me tell you something, the saddest thing that I've found. When your bubble bursts and your world comes tumbling down, certain and clear, and now they're gone and you're homeless and you're not sure where to go from here.
It's not easy, darling, I'm not sure how to give. It's not easy, baby, when you find it so hard to live. It's not easy. Sure how to give. It's not easy,
singer-songwriter Andy McCarroll, and Andy's calling in from Ireland. And we just had a tremendous success with finding talent in Ireland. Not only is the United States here just flooded with talented musicians and singer-songwriters and actors and poets and artists of every genre in between, there's just so much talent in the world, and a lot of that talent is in Ireland. So you just heard Andy's song, It's Not Easy, and you can find more at Andy as we go along at andymccarroll.com. And thank you, Andy, for coming on.
Oh, hi, Laurie. Thank you for inviting me on. Thank you.
No, it's a thrill. I've known Andy almost probably a year because, as everybody knows, I'm a huge Twitter fanatic. I talk to Andy all the time on Twitter, and we email back and forth, and I've played his music on the show before. So this is the Andy McCarroll. When we're talking about the Andy McCarroll, we're running Andy McCarroll's music on the show. Here he is, right here. So by day, Andy, you are a school teacher.
Yes, I am, yeah.
And then at night, you don your cape and become a singer-songwriter.
Yes, I teach 11-year-olds, and I love my job. And it's an integrated school, which is a mixture of both Protestant, Catholic, and other religions and non-religious people in Northern Ireland. So that's my day job. And in the when I get some time outside of family time, I like to write music. I like to write songs.
Well, right now in Northern Ireland especially, kind of has a history of violence and turmoil going on. What's the climate like right now?
Well, things have changed a lot. I mean, since the 60s, 70s, and so on, things have changed incredibly. So, I mean, it's very much normal life here. Back then, when you went into shops, you had to be searched every time you went into a shop. Every time you went anywhere, you were stopped by the police or stopped by the army. Your car was searched. But that is all gone. And it's very much normal life now, which is great. It's a lovely place to be. I love Ireland. I've just been up at the north coast at a place called the Giant's Causeway. I don't know if you've heard of it or not. But it was absolutely gorgeous weather, and it's a lovely place to be. Lovely place to be. Recommend anybody coming to Ireland.
I would like to go to Ireland. I need to get a passport. One day, maybe this week, I'm going to go down and just apply for a passport, because that's half the battle. Once I get a passport, then maybe actually I will go somewhere. But I've never been anywhere other than Mexico and Hawaii and Canada. Other than that, I haven't been anywhere. I'd love to go to Ireland, though. There's so much talent in Ireland. It's not even that big of a place, but it's flooded with talent. There's a lot of music that affects the world that comes out of Ireland.
Yeah. Oh, it's a good place to be. A lot of talent. A lot of it's just a beautiful place. The people are very, very kind, very nice, very friendly. If you want to have a good chat, a good laugh, Ireland's the place to come to. So recommend that you come anytime. And besides, now that you know so many people, you'd have lots of places to stay.
That is true. I could just, what do they call it when you just sleep on people's couches and, you know, kind of go through.
we have beds here. We have beds here.
Oh, you do have beds. Well, what's it like in Ireland as far as you and I have talked before? The world kind of sees the United States as kind of more of a violent society. Now, in Ireland, what's your crime rate like?
In comparison to the U.S., it's very low, especially in terms of gun crime. This is where, especially, I've been keeping up to date on a lot of the gun crime stuff, especially since Sandy Hook. And by comparison, you know, our gun crime is very, very low indeed. When I actually look at the crime rates and the death rates from gun-related incidents in the U.S., it astounds me. I mean, we went through 30 years of extreme violence and shootings and bombings in Northern Ireland here, and there was never once I can recall whereby people felt the need to really arm themselves. But you seem to have this culture, this this thing in the U.S. where everybody feels the need to arm themselves to protect themselves. But yet you do have, you know, the armed forces, you do have your police force. And personally, I just find that a little bit difficult to understand. So mm-hmm. We've come through all of this, but never once during all of those, especially the bad years, no one ever thought of going out and buying some guns to protect themselves. They just relied on the security forces to do that.
So there's not a fear, so to speak, of Ireland, of maybe somebody breaking into your home and then having harm come to you. And then, because here, how we would think of that is that if somebody broke into our home, the response time between what bad could happen to you versus the time that the police response would be, that you're kind of, you're responsible for your fate in that gap, okay? And so if something was to happen to you in that gap, your only line of defense
yeah.
would be a gun, probably, okay?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
so, but in Ireland, are they not, they're not thinking like that, of somebody breaking into their home? Because we do have a lot of home break-ins here.
Well, we obviously have burglaries and so on here as well, but probably not to the same extent. And if someone does break into their home, it's usually, they're not usually armed with a gun. They'd be armed with maybe a knife or something similar to that. Nevertheless, there's not that fear in terms of culture and in terms of we don't go around feeling fearful when I go to sleep at night. I don't feel that someone's going to break into my home. I don't have that, but it does seem, from an outsider looking into the U.S. situation, it seems a lot of people live this way. I mean, they live mm-hmm. with the idea that someone could possibly break in with a gun, or multiple people could break in with guns, and therefore you have to defend yourself. We don't have that same sort of fear here at all. It's not to say that it doesn't happen, but the incidents are not as many. Well, they're not that many at all, in fact.
Mm-hmm.
And usually if things like that happen, gun-related crime normally happens between criminal elements, maybe dissident terrorist
mm-hmm.
groups. It tends to work amongst those people mainly. But in terms of the general public, no, it just doesn't. It's not pervasive at all.
Really? Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
What are the
yeah.
gun rights in Ireland?
Pardon, sir?
Are you allowed to have a gun?
Oh, yes, you can apply for a gun. I mean, for example, a lot of the farming community would have guns, especially shotguns and so on. And, of course, you apply for the gun, you go through all of the background checks, all of the usual checks that we would have in place here. Truthfully, I'm not familiar with what they are. But you go through all those checks, and then, of course, you can get your gun. In the main, it would tend to be shotguns and things like that. But again, it's the farming community would use those for pest control, or maybe they do feel isolated and maybe they do feel that they want to protect themselves. I have a friend who's in the south of Ireland, and I know where he has got a shotgun, which he rarely uses. But there again, it would be mainly for pest control on his farm. So...
Well, that is just incredible. It's such a different way of thinking. I mean, it's a great way of thinking. And in America, I think we all wish that it was that way, that guns were used for, you know, pest elimination or whatever, and you didn't have to even enter it into your brain as a necessity of living type of, you know, thing. Well, the Sandy Hook was just a complete, complete tragedy on, you know, so many levels. And, of course, we've had many tragedies like that here in the United States.
Yes.
And so even as a defender of the Second Amendment, I own a gun. We have a gun in our home. And, you know, like I said, a defender of the Second Amendment, I am aware that something, we're talking about balance in the last hour with our other guests with TV and film, but I'm aware that something is out of balance and something needs to be done. What that is, I don't know, and I feel a frustration as a human with what is going on. And I can see, I mean, I'm not an idiot, I can see that it doesn't happen around the world on a regular basis like it does in the United States, you know?
Yes.
And so...
Sorry?
Go ahead. No, go ahead.
No, I do feel... many people I know and many of my friends, and we talk about this, and then we look at the U.S., we see the rate of gun crime and how accessible guns are. I mean, for the very fact that you maybe go down into town or on the corner store, and there's a gun store, that is just incredible for us to comprehend, that you go in and you can just walk in off the street and you go around and you go in, instead of shopping for your baked beans or your coffee or whatever, you instead you shop for a gun, and I think that's very, very difficult for us in Ireland to understand.
Mhm. Mhm. Yeah. Well, here it is tighter. You just can't. Well, you could walk in and walk out with a gun, but there is a, you know, there's a background check that goes on there. But yes, I mean, you could go to a place that sells diapers and beans and birthday wrapping paper, and you could also go to the gun counter. That would be
really
Walmart. You know, or, you know, stores like that have, multi-purpose, you know, the super stores, there's all kinds of different things that go on. Now, in our home, we only have one gun. So we would probably be not seeing, well, some people might see that as extreme, only having one gun.
Yeah.
And then some people have lots and lots of guns, and some people would see that as extreme. So, and then I think some people fall in the middle, and some people have no guns. But here, it's just, I think most people probably have at least one gun in their home, you know, which, is just... I really never even thought about it until I really started talking to you, and then having your perspective come in, I'm like, really, the world, it's not as black and white
as I thought it was.
Yeah.
And one of the things I find as well, because it seems the U.S. has a different culture. It's got the hunting culture, for example. We don't have that here at all. And therefore... that's why, as an outsider, I cannot look on and just say, this is wrong, or you're crazy. Although I do think, certainly after the whole Sandy Hook thing, whereby the shooting, and where you had a guy who could go in with an assault-type weapon and firing multiple rounds with a magazine of 30 bullets in it, I do think that is crazy. I mean, I look on and I think, why do you have these particular weapons accessible to the public? Surely are they not a military style weapon? To me, that's where, somewhere along the line, you think, well, if I look at the American situation, there's no way you could remove all guns, but what you need to draw the line somewhere and say, well, what guns are you not permitted to have? And therefore, when I let you look on and I think of the AR-15s, the Bushmaster type, and you just think, why on earth would you need one of those things? I don't understand.
Right.
That's where I don't understand, and I look on and I think there's it's gone too far from an outsider's point of view.
Mm-hmm. And that, so with the Sandy Hook situation, and then having all of this perspective that you have about what's going on in America, it led you to write Masters of War. Why don't you tell us a little bit about that song, and then we'll take a break and we'll play it so people can hear it. I think that you did a really good job with that song. And like I said, even though I'm a supporter, I'll say if I'm a defender of the, you know, I haven't really had to defend the Second Amendment, but I support it. And it wouldn't have occurred to me to write a song like that, but it really made me stop and think when you wrote Masters of War of what it touched a place that I was already struggling with internally about things being out of balance, and that there was so much violence, and there had to be some solution that both sides could live with. The fear in the United States is if you take away people's guns, that obviously just there's a lot of debate, but one of them is that the criminal element does not go through background checks, and they would still, it would be almost impossible to take their guns away. Okay,
yeah.
And so then the honest law abiding citizens would have their guns taken away, but we still have that fear. You're not taking away the fear of somebody breaking into someone's home and harm not coming to them. So that fear goes hand in hand with owning a gun. If you take away the law-abiding person's gun, the criminal still has their gun. That fear is still there of someone coming into your home, and now you don't have that last line of defense, so to speak. So, you know, but there's got to be some type of balance, like you were saying, because obviously we can see that, you know, something is out of whack. And so you wrote this song, Masters of War, that we're going to play again here in just a moment.
Well, Masters of War, I grew up with, you know, listening to a lot of Bob Dylan. He was my hero, and he actually wrote a song called Masters of War in the early 60s, and it was very much a protest song about especially the armaments industry and the people who, you know, Dylan uses the phrase, you know, you hide behind walls, you hide behind desks, but I want you to know that I can see through your mask. And it was the whole idea of, you know, the people who make money on the back of armaments and guns and so on. And the younger ones, they go out and they get killed, but there's a lot of people making an awful lot of money on it. That's why I chose to use the Masters of War Revisited, because I think there's a lot of similarities to what was happening now. I mean, I do feel that while the NRA make all the noise about the Second Amendment, while they make all the noise about, you know, safety and everything, the bottom line for me, again, speaking as an outsider, it's all about money. I mean, they just want to make more money, and the more guns they sell, the more money they make. When they want to put guns in schools and so on, it's about selling more guns. Well, anyway, when I came back, you know, I thought of the song came about really as I watched things on the news concerning Sandy Hook, when I read things online, when I listened to all of the details, I was just absolutely, you know, I was shocked. I was very, very shocked about what had actually happened, how it had happened. I have a 7-year-old daughter, and I think that's what really brought it home to me, is when many of these younger children were riddled with bullets. They weren't just shot once. They were riddled between 3 and 11 times. And, you know, my daughter, the same. I could visualize the same thing happening to her and what I would have felt like as a father. And, of course, when I felt that way, I felt I've got to write something. I've got to say something. I can't be silent in this. And that's where the song actually came from.
Okay. Well, let's play it so that other people can listen, then we'll come back and talk about it. I find that your perspective is just so enlightening for me and so refreshing from the standpoint is that I appreciate knowing how other people outside of my culture perceive us.
Yeah.
And it's, I think it's great, Andy, even though you and I have a little bit of a different viewpoint on that, I can certainly appreciate that. So we're going to play Master of War, and we're going to come back and we're going to talk about it. So we'll be back in just a minute with Andy McCarroll. Thank you.
Damn you, Masters of War. Just look what you've done. You who make rifles, you who make the handguns, we see through your pretense, we see through your bluff. Don't you think that it's assault rifles banned and surveillance with violence is your only plan in the warmonger business. It comes as no surprise the more children die, the more your sales will rise. In disbelief, I listen to the words of a fool to make children safer. Put more guns in the schools, arm security guards. Yes, arm teachers do. If it doesn't work, will you arm children too? You masters of war and your weapons of assault. When young children die, you say it's not our fault. You speak about safety, it's a lie, a big front. It's about your love of money, 'cause that's what you want. To stop a bad guy with a gun, every time you need a good guy with a gun, go and bang, bang, bang. I know. Follow Jesus, but don't do what he says. You don't hear his words, you don't follow his ways. Blessed are the peacemakers you preach throughout this land. Can you imagine Jesus with a gun in his hand? Some politicians in the pockets of the NRA, puppets on their strings, have to do what they say. You play Judas of old.
To the Sandy Hook and other gun violence going on in the United States with his song that he sent over for us, Masters of War. It's interesting to see how the outside of the United States perceives the United States. It's not maybe from a judgmental standpoint, but it's trying to understand our culture and maybe the frustration that even I as an American feel with gun violence. And they're also feeling that outside of the borders of the United States. And so there's a frustration globally and collectively as humans of how to deal with this and strike a balance. And that's what Andy's just on a search for, as most of us are here in the United States as well. Do you think that's right, Andy?
Yes, I do. I mean, the United States is a very different place from here, and therefore there's no way that I want to judge people at all. To me, the bottom line is that as long as the number of guns are in the U.S., you know, as they are, you know, I don't know how many millions of guns are there, as long as that, you know, persists, you know, everyone is going to need some sort of protection to ensure that they are safe. I think it's more to do with the level of weapon that is used. You know, somewhere along the line, there's got to be a line drawn as to, yes, these are acceptable, these are not. And obviously, I think that's where this whole debate about gun control and the kind of weapons that are available to buy, that this whole debate is going on. And obviously, too, about the size of the magazines that are used. I was just hearing there that Connecticut, if they've decided that they will limit the size of magazines to 10. Would that be, have you heard anything along those lines?
Yeah, I just thought they did sign that legislation yesterday in Connecticut. And what I'm hoping that by you and I talking is that we can show people, we could have a civilized conversation about guns without, I mean, you have a view that you're trying to understand, and I'm coming from my perspective. And I think you and I are having a very civilized conversation, and you're understanding a little bit about how where I come from, and I'm certainly understanding where you're coming from on that, and it is, you know, as humans, we can have a discussion that doesn't invoke name-calling and screaming and yelling and shutting down of ideas and thoughts, and that's the only way we're going to get to some type of common sense resolution is if we can talk to each other in this manner, and I can understand where you're coming from, and you can understand a little bit of where I'm coming from, and then somewhere in the middle lies common ground.
Yes. I think the one big difference with the U.S. is the accessibility of guns. I mean, you can just walk down the street and there's a store and you can buy a gun. And that's where it's very, very different. And as long as people have such easy access to, especially the sort of the more assault type weapons and the weapons that can do more damage and rapid firing, et cetera, the more people are going to unfortunately die as a result of it all. If those things were limited, there would be less deaths. I think if you, the more guns you have of this particular type, then it's reasonable to assume that there's going to be more deaths as a result of it.
Sure. Yeah, it's it's a very deep rooted issue. There's a level in the United States of distrust with government. I don't know if it's like that, if other countries just got, have that same level of distrust with their governments, but we certainly do in the United States. We have a distrust with criminal justice system to some degree, and of course we have a distrust with thinking that our ultimate protection lies in a third party.
Yeah.
And here, it's just been ingrained into us that, your ultimate survival or protection lies within your own hands. That you cannot count on somebody to get there in time. And like I said, it goes back to a basic fear of somebody coming in and doing you harm. And I will say that does happen. It's happened to me in the past, and it's happened to other people I know. It happens every day. I mean, we are bombarded on TV with situation after situation after situation of crime here in the United States. So until I think that we see that crime is down and we don't need that protection, it's going to be hard for us to take that fear of protecting ourselves out of, out of the equation. Now, how do you take, an assault rifle into that situation? I can completely wrap my brain around that, and I'm going to be out of line with staunch Second Amendment supporters about that. I can see that if you are just a law-abiding good guy, good girl, you want an assault weapon, you can have an assault weapon. But there's huge responsibility that comes with that. The lady at Sandy Hook, where the guns came from, she didn't take that responsibility. It does not appear very serious or as seriously as she should have, because her son was able to access those weapons. So if you do have those type of weapons, I think there's a huge, huge responsibility that comes with that. Enormous. And maybe that responsibility is not worth the acquisition of that firearm.
Yeah.
But there's got to be some type of link in there. I don't want an assault weapon at all, because I'd probably kill myself. But but if somebody else, I don't know why you might need one, except for I grew up in a household where fear of invasion from other countries was prevalent in my home, and that
invasion from other countries,
and that we might need to defend ourselves and I will tell you that still goes on right now in with many people I know, that if another country was to invade us, that we would have to be armed as citizens to defend ourselves. And I know lots of people, to be honest, now it just comes to my head, that they use that all the time, that if at the time during the Cold War, it was Russia. You know, if Russia was to invade or China was to invade or someone else, that we would need to, as a family, have or families within a neighborhood, that we would be militia.
Yes.
And I know people who think like that right now, to this day. Yes, absolutely.
Yes.
So that also comes into it, too.
Yeah. Now, see, that's probably, again, part of your whole history. I mean, I think the very, again, one big difference is the size of the U.S. I mean, it's a massive, you know, compared to Ireland, it's a massive place. And therefore, certainly, you know, certainly when the Second Amendment was written, I mean, you had large areas of where there was no real law enforcement, and maybe there was definitely a need for people to protect themselves. But as time goes on, and where you do have law enforcement agencies in place, like we, for example, have here as well, I mean, somewhere along the line, you've got to hand over that. Well, this is the question I'm asking more than anything else. Surely you must hand that over to those agencies and trust them. But there again, I don't know the situation there at all.
The argument would be more that that you would probably need self-protection more in a dense population than you would maybe even out. Well, although there's going to be argument for, you know, being out as well, but even in a dense population, you're going to have more of the criminal element coming at you, so the odds would go up that you would come in contact with the criminal element, and that the police, that there's a small amount of police and a large criminal element, and that the response time from the police to you, and that's the perception, would be from the time here that you would call 911 to the time that the police would get to your house would be a few minutes, and what would be done in that time and in that circle of time would be between you and the criminal element. And the only thing, the argument would be, the only thing standing between you and that void of time would be how you could defend yourself.
Yes, yes. I understand that, yes.
Okay. So, and, you know, it's going to go on and on and on, and you know, it's a huge debate. I certainly can understand that it is out of balance, and I'm fascinated with how the rest of the world perceives us in that, and it's good to be able to have that viewpoint, because I can understand that it seems out of balance. I totally get that. And as a sensitive person and a sensitive soul, I wish that there was a better way. I don't know if the genie is so far out of the bottle in the United States that can ever be, but something, absolutely, you are 100% right. Something needs to be done. We cannot continue to have these tragedies at this epic proportion, and I think anyone can agree with that. And, and something absolutely has to be done. But let's talk about, Andy, the rest of you have other songs and you're writing songs. You have a great website, andymccarroll.com. Great artwork on there. Who does the artwork on there? Do you do that?
Well, I actually designed it and then I gave it to web designers, but the actual main cover was actually done as a competition with my children in school. I put it, these are 11-year-olds, and I said, this is what I would like to do, and I ran it as a competition in our, what we call Primary 7, they're 11-year-olds. And that was the winning one, and I chose that, and I'm very, very pleased with it.
An 11-year-old did that?
11-year-old did that, yes. And that's the way I would tend to do it. I love children's art. I love children's work, and I think it has a freshness, and sometimes they will just do things the way they feel, the way they want to do something. My daughter was working there earlier on, and she had these three paper plates. But we have this program called Peppa Pig. Do you have that in the States? No.
Mm-mm.
No, it's a children's program. And, of course, she had made Peppa Pig out of these three plates. And I think with children's art, children just go with what they want to do, and they just do it. And I love that. I love the sort of the spontaneity of that and the way they just, they don't really think inside the box. They just do what they want to do, and they'll say, well, I want to use this, I want to use that, and I want to cut and stick this. I want to use paint here. I want to use felt or pens here. And they just go for it. And that's where it came from.
That's amazing. That is amazing. They did a great, great job. And you're right. At that age, they haven't been super influenced by outsiders saying, don't do this or don't do that, or that's wrong, or, you don't want to do that. It's complete freedom.
Yes. Yes.
What did they think about your singing and songwriting?
Well, I think they're beginning to know about it. I mean, I've only been doing since last July. That's when I started doing all of this. Before, and I don't know whether you know this, I used to work with a band called Moral Support. It was way, way back. And it was very much a sort of had Christian roots. It was very much a sort of, I wouldn't say gospel stuff, but it was the whole new wave thing. That's where I started out. And then for a long time I didn't do anything at all. I was a teacher. I decided I didn't want anything more to do with. I didn't want to tour. I didn't want to work in a band. I didn't want to. I just wanted to have a nice, easy life. And so I decided that, I'd go back to teaching. Love my job. I love teaching children. But just over this last number of years, I thought I'd love to write again, and this time not perform, but write. And I'm looking for other people, and that's where, if any of your listeners, if you've got people who really wanted work in the music industry, then I would love to write for more people. And obviously in that I'd have to, not only would they have to believe in me in terms of writing material, but I would have to believe in them in terms of their performance and ability to perform and real desire to make it in the music business.
Well, you'll probably get some people respond. What people don't understand is music is a tough business, and it's a tough life, and I can understand you wanting to take a break and, go into teaching or something, because it is hard. It's a business, and that's what a lot of people don't understand about music, and that's what I found with a lot of musicians, is the hardest thing for them to navigate in music is the business and aspect of the music business.
Yes. Well, I think for me it was certainly that, yes. But from my early days, I grew up in a sort of very much a Christian environment, and I went along to church and did all of that. And therefore, for a long time, when I started to write, it was all about Jesus. It was about very much church-based things. And when I stopped, I found that I couldn't really do anything else. I found it really difficult to write about ordinary life. It didn't seem to have the same meaning, the same, it just didn't have it for me at all. And to write about ordinary things or just about my perspective on the world, I just found it really difficult to do. And therefore, it's been the whole time out of it. I'm not really involved in church anymore. And I think it's being out of that has really helped me see a much broader picture. I feel in those particular days that it was very much life in a bubble, and I lived life in a very narrow way. And it's only when I actually came out of that that then I started to think about other things and think about the broader aspects of the world that we live in. And And I find now that I can write about so many different things, and that's what I want to do, basically.
Absolutely. That's great. And that's one thing I want to mention, because I've had that same kind of epiphany. I grew up in a bubble, very narrow-minded. Well, I think most people do, because your world is narrow and your sphere of influence is very narrow. And you just have the influence of your inner circle, your family, your parents.
Yes, that's right, yeah.
And then as you get out of that, you start seeing things differently. Well, because when you're a child, they can't really let you go out into the big world, you know, because of course, in the United States, there's just so much to maybe be afraid of. We're kind of going back to that again. But as you grow up, you start having different experiences. You start having kind of another life experience. And so it broadens your view. You start seeing things from other perspectives. You can think about those things and marinate on them and come to different views. I think you're right on with that.
Yes, yeah. And obviously
I was going to say the same thing. It's obviously where you've come up with, you know, a lot of the things that you're writing about.
Yeah, there's so many things that I want to write about, and not only in terms of relationships. It's really funny because when I was working with this band, Moral Support, it was very much, you know, as a Christian, I wanted to change the world. And then I came through a phase of, I am really tired of trying to change the world because I just can't do it. I'll be quite happy enough if I can change me. And therefore I came out of that whole thing, but it's really interesting. Therefore then I go around and I turn around and I write a song like Masters of War, which again is again wanting to change something. But there is that dimension to me, to what I want to write, but now it's so much broader. There are other things that I just want to just have fun songs, things about life and my perspective on life and others' perspective on life as well.
Well, I think that's a good hook for a song that you just came up with. I can't change the world, but I can change me. You should write a song around that, because that's really the basis of the whole thing, you know.
Yeah.
You know, if you try to look at the whole perception of changing the world, it's just too huge. But if we just start with me and go from that point, it has little ripple effects that go out into the world and small changes can be made, just like we were talking about in the last hour with Edward Fudge. You know, he just started with his little perspective, and then 30 years later, there's this huge film that comes out that you will have obviously ripple effects there. And so, but he just started with him, and then the same thing. You start with you, and I start with me, and here I'm talking to you from the United States, and you're in Ireland, and we have this great discussion, and it's just little things like that along the way, and that's forming this human chain and experience and linking them all together. I think it's fantastic. I think it's great. I've really enjoyed our conversation.
Yes.
Well, we're going to go out today with Circus. I'm going to play that one out today, Andy. I want people to go to your website, andymccarroll.com, and I'll give you the final word.
Yes. Yes, and also probably the one, even more so than my website, I use my Facebook. It's just Andy McCarroll Music, and that's where I tend to do most of my postings, and, you know, that's where I make I probably use it more at the moment than my own website. But, yes, Laurie, it's been lovely talking to you. I hope I get a chance to talk again. The Masters of War, I enjoyed writing, and I'm really glad that I had a chance to speak about it and say to your listeners concerning it. Again, the bottom line is that I'm not wanting to be judgmental. I just want to ask questions. And I think if there's a way in which we can all have a better life for everyone, and especially our children, then it's really important to make for all of us to make really good choices and good decisions. even though it may be different to what we've done in the past. And that's, you know, that's what I wanted to do through that song. But I'm going to keep writing, and I'll keep on sending you stuff. And then if you want me back, I'll be very happy to come back and chat some more.
Well, you know, I'll have you back anytime, Andy. Anytime. And I just want everyone to know, now you see why I love Andy McCarroll. He's just a great guy. And he's asking questions. There's nothing wrong with asking questions. We should be, in fact, we encourage asking questions. That's, in the United States, that's, you know, we say that the First Amendment for freedom of speech. We need to be able to ask these questions, and we need to be able to have civilized discussions with friends who are, you know, have a little bit different life experience, and have to have these conversations. There's nothing wrong with that. Absolutely nothing wrong. We could only gain from that. And Andy,
yeah,
I really appreciate you coming on and sharing that with everybody, and especially me over the past year, and we will absolutely do this again.
Yes, and we'll keep in touch on Twitter, and anybody else who wants to join us, feel free.
Absolutely.
It's lovely talking to you, Laurie, after all of this time, and hopefully we'll get a chance to talk soon.
We will, definitely. Well, you have a good rest of your day. I know you are 8 hours ahead of us here, so my day's just beginning. Yours is coming to an end, and we're going to go out with Circus by Andy McCarroll. Find him on Twitter, find him on Facebook, and support his music, and absolutely let's join the conversation, but we're only going to have a civilized conversation, so if you're not civilized, you're not invited.
Thank you, Laurie. My pleasure.
All right,
too.
Andy.
Okay,
I'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye.
All right, so that was Andy McCarroll. You understand why I enjoy him so much, and we're going to go out today with his song Circus. Have a good day.
Once more the circus has come to town. You are the juggler and I the clown. Yes, you're the act that I won't forget. The one mistake that I regret. I was goodbye and I was for good. No more tries, I was understood. Don't want you here messing up my brain. I did that once, but